It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave. Well, we're not. I am. It is 5 o'clock and it's Friday, but Mercedes can't be with us this afternoon. She has urgent work to do back at the Friday Rave headquarters, preparing the axolotls for the breeding program. She'll be back next Friday, but for today, it's just me, just like old times, and see if I can remember to operate this paddle. Now, what could I say? I haven't got a lot prepared today. I think there's enough to be talking off the top of my head. But how can I put it? I got here earlier trying to work out, go through the news and all the rest of it and go get my numbers together. But there are just too many damn interesting people hanging around 3CR in the office and in the courtyard and all the rest of it to actually knuckle down and do some work. I have conversations about all kinds of things. I mean, from, I don't know, quoting the Gerildery letter amongst all things this afternoon. But anyway, we'll do what we can. I want to start, however, with a correction from last week, or a possible correction and more information. When we were talking about the US submarine that hit the Iranian boat, the Dina, we said from our sources that it was the SSN Minnesota, a Virginia-class submarine that fired two torpedo missiles, missed one. How could they miss? And hit it with the other one. I mean, or no, I say the correction first of all. We've since learned that it seems to be general consensus that it wasn't the Minnesota. It was actually a submarine called the USS Charlotte. Now, whether it's the Minnesota or the Charlotte, I can hear you thinking, what does it matter what the bugger's name was? Well, it matters a great deal. Because while the Minnesota was a Virginia-class submarine, and Australian sailors are seconded to the US Navy to learn how to operate and how to work on Virginia-class submarines, because that's what they reckon we're going to get sometime in the future in due course. But the Charlotte, on the other hand, is a Los Angeles-class submarine, which is slightly smaller than the Virginia-class, but have deployment of troops. I think the Virginia has 133, just from memory, and the Los Angeles is about 150. Obviously, on the newer Virginia-class, certain things are, more things are automated. But my question is, if what we're seconding Australian submariners to the United States is to learn how to operate and how to work a Virginia-class submarine, what were they doing on a Los Angeles-class? I mean, it's a minor matter. I can see it's not an important thing because they're learning the art of war, they're killing and doing everything they're doing in an illegal war with the United States, regardless of whether it's on a Virginia class or a LA class. Now, that's probably only of interest to certain boffins like Mercedes and I. But it is important because while they could say that the submariners were there in an observing capacity to learn and were not involved in the warfighting capabilities of the submarine, while we could imagine that to be the case in our wildest dreams on the Minnesota, we cannot imagine that to be the case on a Los Angeles class. It's just not the way it works. They were there, they were part of the crew, they were involved, they were culpable, they were responsible. Australia is culpable and responsible. And that means, my friends and other listeners, that as long as we allow the Australian government to act like this, we're responsible. We are. We're responsible. But anyway, I know I've said it before, and Mercedes said it before. We don't know. It needs to be said. I don't know what to talk about. There's so much going on that half an hour isn't long enough to even give a brief overview. And it's, at the same time, you know, it's too long to talk about one aspect of it. So I'm just going to rave. I've got news sites open in front of me, and I'm just going to do it like I used to do it in the old days and just do it off the top of my head. But anyway, I'm going to start here in Australia because we're playing an increasingly important role. Well, actually, we're not playing as much as we're being played with, if we're going to be honest. When you listen to the words coming out of Albanese, Wong, and Miles even, officers, you'd be forgiven for thinking that the Australian government is doing what Australian governments have done for many, 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 many years, and that is making strategic decisions on our safety, about our wealth, about our image in the world, everything to do with us. They're making strategic decisions to support the United States at the United States' behest. Now, I'm not sure that a single Friday Rave listener believes any of the crap about needing to protect Australians in the Gulf states. I mean, as David Shoebridge said in the Senate, was it yesterday or the day before, what about, thousands and thousands of Australian citizens in Lebanon? No one seems to be given a toss about them. So it's not about protecting Australians. Just forget that. You know, I doubt that even if, let alone, you know, I said 3CR listeners, I don't think even Fox News listeners would believe that bullshit. So let's start with the idea that Australia is sending troops, or may send troops, to the Gulf. We have sent troops to the Gulf. 80 of them left this morning. 80-something, 85, I think the number was. Who knows? Because they're not telling us the truth. We don't know. But we're being told they're going not to take part in any of the attacks on Iran, but to protect Australians in a defensive capacity only. Now, when you look at we talk about defence capacity, can you believe that the Gulf states, I think it was the UAE, put in a complaint at the Security Council of the United Nations about Iran strikes on the Gulf states, and the United Nations Security Council condemned Iran for striking Qatar and the UAE and Bahrain and Saudi Arabia and who knows where else, without mentioning Israel or Gaza or the United States. It's what's happening here, all right, is that I said it years ago in the days of when I first started doing this radio show. I can't remember who was the Prime Minister, whether it was Gillard or I think it was Gillard, might have been Rudd, the first Rudd Prime Ministership, might have been Gillard, where all of a sudden the phrase the global rules-based order started being bandied about. The GRBO. And I said at the time that what the global rules-based order was the start of an attempt to sideline the United Nations. Now, the United Nations is far from perfect. Far from perfect. Never was. Never was, you know, what it set out, what it could have been. But even that was too perfect and too even-handed for the likes of the United States and Australia and England. So we set about creating this new thing called the Global Rules-Based Order, to the point where the United Nations is now irrelevant. Irrelevant. Those of you old enough to remember, it was only 20-odd years ago. I'm about to talk about going into Iraq, going into Afghanistan back in the early 2000s. The debate was about whether the United States had a right to go in alone or whether they needed the sanction of the United Nations Security Council. And they did need the sanction of the Security Council. That's what they needed for the coalition of the willing. And that, you know, let them get away with untold atrocities. But now they don't even need it. But anyway, Australia. Let's talk about the way Australia's going to send troops to the Gulf. As I said, 85 of them. And not just troops, but missiles and aircraft. We've committed an A7 Wedgetail surveillance plane, which is state of the art, which not even the United States has the capability of. When I was talking to Mercedes yesterday or earlier today, she was pointing out to me that the Americans had ordered some of these things, the Australian design, A7A Wedgetail, to replace their Boeing E7s because they're far superior aircraft, apparently, with surveillance technologies. They were cut and they've only recently been reinstated when they've now determined how useful they could be. And they're like a flying switchboard. They can communicate with dozens of planes in the air and send all the electronic surveillance and all the information. It's a giant switchboard in the sky, basically, and it's getting its information from the Five Eyes intelligence gathering network, which is being downloaded through Pine Gap, of course, and other places, relayed through the military communications channels. And then once it's up in the air, it acts as like, you know, no other way to put it, a giant switchboard in the sky. They've also sent, what did I say? It looks like this morning the Globemaster logistics and transport plane went over, and two KC-30 tankers. And the KC-30 tankers fuel not only the Globemaster or the Wedgetail, but also Lockheed's F-15s and F-35s in midair. I mean, it's an amazing piece of engineering when you see how these things work, flying along and they let a boom out and a F-35 pilot comes up closer than I feel safe driving to another vehicle and connects the hoses up. It's just an amazing piece of technology. But my point is we've sent two of these tankers there and they both hold about 100 tonnes of aviation fuel. And I can't see them sending them empty. And also the Globemaster. I can't see the Australian military sending them over empty. Anyway, we're also been told we're sending an unspecified number of AMRAAM missiles. Now, we've got an order of 400 of these things from the US, 200 of two different types. And the US has just announced that it's diverting missiles under the Foreign Military Sales Program from customers who have already ordered and who are waiting for their missiles to the Gulf. The missiles we've ordered weren't expected until late next year, I believe, probably a couple of years after that is when they would have got here, but now they're going to be pushed on back order. Or maybe these are the missiles we're sending, but probably not. We have our own stocks of missiles, and our own stocks of missiles are there. We're told we keep having to spend this money because of the danger of attack from China. Now, you don't believe that. And I don't believe that. But let's assume, let's suspend our disbelief for a minute and assume that our military planners and our politicians, your Dickie Mileses and your Penny Wongs and your Albanese's, let's pretend for a minute that they believe that. And we're sending our missiles, we got these missiles to save us from China, and we're sending them over to the Gulf. Isn't that irresponsible? Either they're acting irresponsibly now, or they've been bullshitting us for years. Whichever one, they're not working in your interests or my interests. Anyway, we don't know what's there because the military don't actually publish their missile transportation information. You know, what am I going to say? The tanker, 100 tonnes. I've just got notes here, dot points, 100 tonnes of fuel on each one. Now, the government. They tell us that we've got plenty of fuel. The opposition are scaring us and saying we're running out of fuel. The petrol stations are price gouging. And actually the fuel went up, started going up around this country as soon as the war started. Normally there's between, you know, around 10 days anyway, before the price flows on to the consumer. But they're price gouging. That is, they're profiteering from war. The oil companies, the service stations, are profiteering from war, like all the other major Barbaras before them. And whether we have got enough fuel or not, who knows? The government tells us we've got plenty. But we're about a third of the 90-day reserve that the International Energy Agency reckons we need to have on hand. But it gets worse than that, folks. And this is what they're not talking about. A fair amount of our military strategic fuel reserve isn't even located physically in Australia. It's 1,500 kilometres away, somewhere in Texas. Can you believe that? Part of Australia's strategic fuel reserve isn't located in Australia. It is located in Texas. Now, do you think there's one particular tank or a series of tanks or, I don't know, Tupperware containers laying around an office somewhere in Texas or in the Pentagon, wherever they are, with an Australian flag on it and saying, Aussie fingers only, the rest of yous do not touch. Bugger all there is. If the US needs that fuel, they'll use it. I mean, does anyone really believe that in the event of Australia and the US needing access to the oil reserves that Australia owns but being kept in Texas, that Australia will get a drop of it? Bugger all. What would we? But this is the real point I want to make, I guess. I'm getting to it. I'm getting to it, folks. Looking through me dot points here. Let's talk about the Australian government, I said. I don't think the Australian government did decide, for example, to send troops, to send missiles, to send fuel, to send tankers, to send a surveillance aircraft, to send a logistics aircraft, to help with the war effort. Now, there are cynical commentators, more cynical than I, on the military side of the media, who have suggested that Australia was told rather than asked to send these things. But I reckon, my friends, it goes even deeper than that. It has been a long-standing policy that the Australian government, of whatever flavour, takes a how-high response to US requests. But I'd be very surprised if that's still the case. Not that I think they wouldn't say yes, but I very much doubt that they are even given the opportunity to say yes. I doubt they are even asked. I mean, why bother asking if you're going to do it anyway? That would go some way at least to explaining the Albanese Wong Miles triad, their lack of position on anything. It's not their position. And I don't believe they have any idea of what's going on until after it's already happened. I don't know, I reckon some of us might have known that we were sending two KC-30s even before Albanese did. Definitely before Miles did. Miles still thinks it's Monday. Wong doesn't give a fuck. He'll just say whatever she's been told to say. But they've got no idea what's going on. And this is a subtle but distinct and important difference between being asked to do something, even if you're not really given a choice to refuse, being asked on the one hand and being put in a position where you just have to wait on the sidelines and keep your mouth shut while things happen without your approval and then run around like proverbial headless chooks trying to make it look as if you were necessary or even important in the decision-making process determining what went down. And that subtle and distinct and important difference is what I call sovereignty. Okay, now, if we're asked, knowing that we'll say yes, we could still say, you know, we've got the wrong people in power. we could still say, if only it was this person instead of that person. You know, like in the US, they're saying, if only it was anyone but Trump, as if that would make, well, it might make a little bit of difference, but bugger all, I believe, really. And having a leadership which honestly does not know, are waiting. I mean, you talk about the Iranian refugees, for example, the soccer team that were offered to stay here. And you had, for example, we wondered, geez, Australia's almost done the right thing. Come close to appearing caring or human. And then we find out a couple of days later, Albanese gets on and says, Donald Trump asked me, expressed concern for their safety. So we said, oh, okay, we'll take them. It's like, oh, geez, okay, Don, we'll take them, mate, if you say we have to. And then you had Tony Burke skiting about how I made it clear to these people it was only for them. It wasn't for any of their family or any of their friends. It's only for them. And there are strict rules and strict conditions. Like, you know, they didn't want to take them, but the Americans told us to. Now, I don't know where this dumping of sovereignty come from, whether it AUKUS or more specifically the myriad laws enacted to facilitate it, like the Defence Export Amendment Act, which I've been carping on about for years since it was first debated, or it wasn't actually debated, was it, though? First discussed in Parliament, and the Naval Nuclear Regulator, which has given power to do anything with nuclear power on naval ships in Australia, including American ones, but has no regulatory authority over American ones, only over Australian ones. So anyway, that's just where I am. And oh, I don't know, I got down here. Look, I've got to say, as I said, we've sent missiles that we were told, we've been told for ages, that are in stock to protect us against a threat of invasion from China. Imagine how the South Koreans feel. The South Koreans have just had their THAAD, that's tactical high altitude air defence system, the Star Wars system basically, that they're using to shoot missiles out of the air. They've just taken that out of South Korea to use in the Gulf. And South Korea's paid billions for it on the excuse of needing to protect itself from North Korea and from China. And the US defence pact with South Korea is much stronger than any defence pact they've got with Australia. So think about that. We're putting missiles over there. We're making missiles. The missiles are that are being used, $6 billion in the first 3 days, hundreds of thousands. Before this war even began, I was reading reports, and I've spoke to you about reports coming out of the Pentagon that we're running out of bullets, guys. We need to do something. That's why we've opened two new missile plants of Lockheed Martin and one by Kongsberg. One of the Lockheed Martin plants, they're just assembling parts from the United States. Anyway, that's about all I've got time for. The last thing I'm going to say, because I've got the people from Radio MMT coming, waiting at the door, giving me the hairy eyeball. The last thing I've got to say is, because the Straits of Hormuz are being blocked, the oil tanker flotilla is now moving along the south coast of Saudi Arabia to attempt to get through the Red Sea. Now, let me just say one word. The Houthis. That means they need to go between Yemen and Djibouti. And have the Houthis from Yemen done anything to stop shipping in support of US and Israeli imperialism? Let us see what's going to happen there. Anyway, folks, the main point I wanted to say is we've sold out our sovereignty. We need to stop talking about the nasty Australian government, because a government, as far as I'm concerned, is people who make the decisions about what Australia does, and we no longer have one of those. That's all I've got time for, Mercedes, and I'll be back next Friday. Till then, Radio MMT.